Hello, and welcome to the Becoming Podcast with Anne Fancy. Here we are together, and the intention here is that we have meaningful conversations on the journey of becoming. Sometimes that will mean it's just you and I having a heart-to-heart chat about what it means to be human, what it means to be on this path of growth, and learning to strip away the layers of conditioning that have kept you and have kept me from living my most authentic truth. Other times we'll follow along with others as they walk through their journey. They'll walk us through the trials and tribulations, the breadcrumbs that led them to where they are now, and what they've done to create a meaningful and soulful life. There's so much power in storytelling and truth-telling. That is what I want to share here. I want to share real stories of truth, of life, of growth, of evolution, and I just appreciate you listening. So please, if you enjoy this, subscribe and follow along with us. I can't wait to hear, hopefully, from each of you. Thanks, and let's get going. Hello, and welcome to today's podcast. You get me the whole time. So buckle up. Let's get into this conversation today. I often talk about in class and in the world about this idea of being in the work, right? We think of work so often as what we do to make money. And so often what we do to make money, it has very little to do with the work that we're meant to be doing in this life, right? We have something that pays the bills, and if you're lucky, you love it, and it doesn't feel like work. But the real work, I think, of being a human, having this experience of humanness, but truly ultimately being a spiritual being, having this experience, is all about the work of showing up as yourself, of what I talked about in this intro of this program, deconditioning who we believe the world has told us we need to be. And I want to just sit with this and break this all down and let you know my thoughts on what this all really means and how we show up to do the work and what that could even look like. So let's dig in. I found this quote. I created this as a presentation for an event I was speaking at, and I found this quote to sort of set the stage. Maybe life isn't about avoiding the bruises. Maybe it's about collecting the scars to prove we showed up for it. So much of what I believe is that we are being asked all the time to show up in our lives, our relationships, for our jobs, for our people, but more importantly, to show up as ourselves wholeheartedly in the world. And that means that you show up with your bruises and your scars as evidence of what you've endured. This ride of humanness is not meant to be easy. So if you're expecting that everything, including your relationships, your job, is all going to be hunky-dory and easy, it's time for a major paradigm shift, a shift in your mindset, because that is going to keep you on the struggle bus. And more so than that, you're going to feel really stuck in expectations that will never be met. So often we hear in motivational talks and companies and people and workshops you go to want you to do this work of goal setting. And while I can appreciate what goal setting is meant to create, I think it misses the mark. And part of the reason I think it misses the mark is that goal is the end towards which effort is directed, right? It assumes that at some point you're going to get there. They're going to get there to reaching happiness. You're going to feel content. You're going to finally feel great because you lost the 20 pounds you've been fighting with for the last two decades. That you're going to run the marathon, get the job, get the house, get the spouse, get the child, get the thing. And then all of a sudden, you're going to feel blissfully happy and content. And it sets us up, in my opinion, for a couple things. One, you get there and you realize you're still unhappy, right? Look at the world of celebrity and how difficult having everything you think you ever wanted becomes when you still have to face yourself and not feel content, happy, right? And then even more than that, goal often, I think, is so externally motivated. Right? The world tells us once you have these things, you're going to feel really great. And then you find that you don't. And we just look for the next external measuring stick or marker to create that end goal of contentment, and it doesn't happen. So I think goal is really not the right word. For me, what makes more sense and feels like it comes from my belly is this notion of intention. And Merriam-Webster says a determination to act in a certain way. And I think this is determined by our internal guidance, your soul's purpose, your own quiet inner voice, which comes from your higher self. And it's really about a life of design. And I, even with that, would say that that design piece largely is already built within you. It's a matter of getting out of your own way to uncover it and to engage with co-creation and express that version of yourself that has always lived within you, right? Like the seed always knows what it will become. And for us, it's our job to quiet the noise that is telling you to become something other than what you are, right? So if you, we don't go to the lettuce seed and ask it why it became lettuce and tell it that we really think it should have been a carrot, right? No, we simply allow it to be what it is, right? This goes to this argument on raising children and that so often we're trying to raise children in a way that we are creating them to be who we want them to be, who we think the world needs them to be, instead of in creating a nourishing environment that allows them to be who they are. And I think that it's hard work to just invite our children into self-expression of who they are, because we weren't often given that opportunity. And I know that what I often am now trying to do, even for my own self, is figure out what it is I need to nourish the soil to become what it is I am meant to become, to offer myself back to the world as a contributor, a light bearer. I absolutely am coming at this conversation with the understanding that you agree with me, that you are a spiritual being having a human experience, not the other way around, right? And so if you're like, well, I'm not sure I agree with that, it's cool. I've got other podcasts for you to listen to. But if you could just entertain this idea that we make this shift in our mind and our body, that we are a spiritual being in this thing we call the game of life, and that our job is to create the most pure, beautiful, and honest expression of humanness, to grow and to contribute back to the grand whole, right? So I'm going to talk about things in a way that we have that understanding. To me, the deep and meaningful intentions are necessary to feed and nourish the decision to grow, right? So you have to have a meaningful intention in order to nourish growth. Otherwise, growth feels goal-oriented and outside of you and otherwise known as achievement. And achievement is not going to be the thing. It's not ever going to be the thing that will make you happier for very long or make you happy for very long. It just isn't. I can think of lots of things and lots of achievements people had. And yes, for a moment, a day, a week, even a month, you feel pretty awesome. And then at some point, that call, that whisper, that dissatisfaction starts to creep back in. I believe that our job is growth, that growth is the work, that evolving is the work. And here, let's just talk back a little bit about what goals like can feed, right? Goals, in my opinion, feed things like reputation. They feed legacy, right? And legacy, yeah, I want to leave a legacy too in some ways. I want to make sure that I leave a legacy of positive impact, that I came and I contributed, okay? But so often when we think about the end result of legacy, right, it's like, who does the world see you as? It's not necessarily a reflection of who you actually are. It's just this outward impression, and it's ego. Whereas for me, intention feeds my desire to contribute to the collective good. It's meaningful. It's creating a meaningful life. It's just simply being a contributor who offers my life, my purpose-driven life, to the world. And that innately creates satisfaction because I know that I'm being guided from the perspective of my soul. Okay. I listened to a podcast just for a minute or two, well, maybe 10 minutes. And it was Rich Roll, and he was interviewing Jedediah somebody. That's how much I remember of it. That's how well I listened. And Rich Roll asked him this question. Let me back up one step. Jedediah was riding a 14,000-mile bike ride to bring awareness to mental health, right? And Rich Roll asked him this question. It is Jedediah Jenkins. I thought it was. I should have trusted my instinct. Okay, so Rich Roll asked him this question that said, you know, am I doing this because... she said, I'm sure you came to the point in your ride where you said to yourself something like, am I doing this because this is what I really want to do? And I'd even say, am I doing this because this is what I'm really, truly called to do? Or am I doing this because I want to be known as someone who would do this? Those are innately very different questions. Right? Do I want to be seen as someone who would do this 14,000-mile bike ride? Or do I really, truly feel called to do this work? Okay, I'm a yoga teacher, and so often I see people who do the training because it looks like a really wonderful thing to do, to be a yoga teacher, and how cool that would look, and how incredible my Instagram following could become because of this, right? But the facade of yoga teacher and somebody who's actually in the work of self-reflection, of this practice of connection, of uniting. And to me, yoga is all about learning to embrace the struggle, learning to embrace the work, learning to continually be in the space of self-inquiry and say, I'm willing to seek my edge off the mat. Right? To me, that is what makes for a powerful yoga teacher. The rest of it just becomes platitudes and bullshit and things that people are not connecting with. Now, I can speak to that version of it, right? But maybe you can speak to the version of it of your friends on social media that project their life to be one way and the reality is another, right? Do I want to appear to be the kind of person who has a perfect marriage and a perfect life and perfect children? Or am I really that person? And by the way, nobody is that person. Relationships are not meant to be perfect and easy. Otherwise, what would they be teaching us? Nothing. Nothing. I watched this great documentary called, I can't think of any names of anything today. I believe it was called Wake Up, or Waking Up. And it was not the Sam Harris podcast or book. Those are both great, though. And at one point, this guy who was having this this experience of all of a sudden becoming very psychic and was really freaked out by it. And he went to speak to all of these masters all over. And he ended up speaking to a Sufi. And he must have been discussing something about the challenges of his relationship because his significant other didn't understand what he was going through. And what the Sufi basically said to him is like, don't let go of that relationship. Like, relationships are at the heart of the work of humanness. And without them, we really stifle our own growth. And I thought that was pretty profound, especially in the era of basically, if it doesn't work, find a new one, right? And the disconnect between our parents who perhaps stayed in relationships too long, at least some of them, or, you know, my parents have been married 50 years, and I witnessed that it is not glitter and unicorns and rainbows and freaking butterflies all the time. But I also witnessed that they really stayed in the work. They work on it. And sure, I'm sure there's lots of things they could have done to continue to grow and make it better. And I'm certainly not saying that everyone should stay in every relationship. Not all are meant to last your lifetime, right? But being in that work of relationship is hugely, hugely important. Okay. Anyway, so back to this, you know, do you want to be the kind of person, I got sidetracked, who does the work or not, right? Do you want to be in the appearance of it, right? Do you want to perform your life in a way that makes other people think that you got your shit together, right? Or do you want, are you willing to be who you are, outwardly and inwardly, right? That the outside and the inside match in a deep alignment. I love this quote, no idea who said it. Don't change yourself so other people will like you, but instead be yourself so the right people will love you, right? It's just like the Dr. Seuss one about I'd rather be hated for who I am than loved for who I am not. And I think that the work of being yourself is going to call you to those responses all the time. To be yourself even when it disappoints other people. To be yourself even when you feel like you're going to meet some dissatisfaction, judgment, criticism, or disappointment. Because, you know, what we're asking ourselves is instead of being motivated by who we are and pressured by the world, instead that we choose to find the internal answer of who I am, right? I asked this question to that group, you know, who is the world telling you to be? And these mostly young people, 20 to 25, said things like beautiful, successful, educated, strong, to be a mother, to be a parent, to fit into these tidy boxes, right? Maybe yours was your life told you that you had to be religious and you had to be a homemaker and you had to be domestic, or you had to have it all and do it all, that you had to work and raise your kids, or you know, there's a million ways that the world has told us to be, right? And everyone has their own pressures that came both from within their family and their culture, and also the pressure that has come from the outside world, right? Certainly, you have to be thin. It helps if you're white. It certainly helps if you're a white man. And I don't mean that to be an asshole. It's just true, right? And that we've been trying, so many of us, so much of our lives to fit inside this box, because the promise is that if you fit your sparkly self inside this tidy box, everything will be great. And that's a big lie. You know, I think too, when my parents were offered religion, and so much of organized religion said, if you do these things, if you follow these rules, if you create your life to be this way, if you raise your children with these boundaries, right, then your life will inherently be good and you will be rewarded. And that didn't happen, right? That didn't happen for my parents, right? They saw lots of disappointment. There's black sheep and gay children and all kinds of things that they did not expect to see or hear, because they followed the rules. And the rules said, if you do this, you will have this outcome. And it was a big freaking lie. It's also a big lie that if you do all these things and you fit yourself into this tidy box, you're going to be happy. Because the problem is that you might make the world outside of you happy because you're not making them uncomfortable, whoever they are, right? But you will likely be miserable because you don't fit inside that box. And you were never meant to, and none of us were meant to fit inside any box other than the one that you determined before you even entered into this body, right? So that, to me, is the work, and the work is figuring out who is that version of myself that I need to seek and satisfy, right? And it starts in the space of inquiry, and then we have to ask questions. Like, the first question is, what's in my way? What are these obstacles? What are the four walls that I've put around myself to keep myself small? What is inside this box? What are these walls that are holding me in and small? Is it pressure to have a certain career or to get married or to be thin, right? If I could take back the number of years, the amount of money, the time and energy I spent worrying about things like calories and my love handles and whether or not I fit into a certain size pant and how I thought that my worth would be better or I'd be valued more if I looked a certain way, and that I certainly couldn't be a successful yoga teacher with a curvy body, right? If I could take back those hours and hours I spent worrying about that absolute and money, complete and utter bullshit, right? And all I did was dampen and damper myself. All I did was work to successfully keep myself small, which is what the world, the outside world, the people in power, the ones who are afraid of the rest of us who are full of light and fire and excitement and dissatisfaction, and those of us who are called to transform the world, they want us to play small. They want to keep us in the box. We are safer in there. We can't change the world if we're worried about the size of our effing pants, right? So, sorry. That's my box that I really tried to fit in for a really long time. And those were the walls that were built up around myself and my experience. I would love to know what yours are. We've all got different ones. I mean, when I was in this group, you know, young men were saying, I have to be buff. I have to be fit and muscular and have, you know, a certain shape of body, right? I know men in the gay world, at least for a long time, and probably still, felt they had to be thin and waif-like, right? I mean, there's pressures everywhere, right? If you were in certain ethnicities, it was better to have your skin be lighter or darker. I don't know. It depends on the one you were in. I think most often it's lighter, which is effed up on its own, right? Shouldn't we be allowed? Well, there is no shouldn't we be. We are. You are given permission to be exactly who you are. And what needs to happen is not for you to change yourself, but to soften into who you are and to release the conditioning that's telling you to be something else. Because we all carry around these faulty stories, these myths, these beliefs that keep us so stuck, right? You can probably think about your most recent fight with a spouse and or a loved one, and it reflects probably the last 10 fights you've had that go back and whittle down to a belief that you have about yourself, something like unworthiness or imperfection or inability to do all the things, or that it's your job to make everybody else happy, or that you're simply, you don't know enough, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, that you always screw things up, that you deserve the judgment of the world, that no one will help you, that you have to do it alone, or that you don't belong, or that you can't disappoint people. You know, I mean, we can just keep going, that we're out of control, that we're not trustworthy, that it's too late to fix it, that we're too old, that we're too fat, that we're too black, that we're too white, that we're too young, we're too this, we're too that, right? There's 1,000 myths you tell yourself about who you are that are only serving to keep you disempowered. And what I'm asking all of us to do is to step into the work of checking our fears and our faulty beliefs so that we can step up and step in to contribution, to lightness, to giving back, to creating a meaningful life. You have to get out of your own way, and it is not easy work. You have to look at your wounds, right? I love this one. If you don't heal from what hurt you, you'll bleed on the people that didn't cut you, right? If we don't heal our wounds, if you don't start to look and understand it, why you're hurt, what hurt you, and how you bleed on your life, how you bring those wounds into every conversation, every story you tell yourself, and how you prove them to be true because you only hear the parts of the world that are reflecting back to you the faulty belief. That we only hear what confirms what it is we only believe, what we already believe, right? And we don't hear the other piece. We don't hear the compliments. We don't hear the messages of the world telling you to rise up, to break free, to jump up and out. And here's what the other thing we do. We find ways to numb, right? For me, for so long, it was body obsession. Whether that had to do with eating or not eating, whether those were the years I was a size 0, a 2, or a 4, or those they were the years I was struggling to stay in a 10 or a 12, right? It doesn't matter which one of that. We all have our own special numbing agents, right? And a lot of them are very socially acceptable, which is half the problem, right? So workaholism, yeah, keep working, stay busy, have 17 jobs, never come home and spend time with the people you love. Just keep busy at work and then you don't have to look at yourself, right? Or just busyness in general, volunteering for every single course of entry at the school and helping everybody out and constantly offering yourselves up as service. Being of service is beautiful, but if you are free of boundaries and you keep yourself busy because you can't be still, that is a different thing. Okay. Obsessive exercise, super, super socially acceptable. Be really thin and be really fit, and people will think that you'll have your life together. And that just becomes the armor by which you keep yourself free from vulnerability. Not to mention, you can spend a lot of time staying busy that way too. Clean eating and excessive thinness go with that too. Totally socially acceptable, right? Because the world says thin puts you inside this box, and then inside the box you're safe because nobody will judge you and you can't be hurt if you fit the mold. Also a big fat lie, okay? Excessive cleanliness, keeping your house in perfect order is just one more way too that we keep ourselves feeling safe and in control. And that's also a lie. Okay. Even shopping is largely socially acceptable. And I mean, listen, I can blow money at Target just with the best of them. And it's absolutely a way I've used. For me, if I had my eating into a normal pattern and control, then I would shop too much. And if I was totally obsessing about my eating, I wouldn't need to shop. But one way or the other, I was finding a way to squash myself and to limit my light and to keep myself busy and, you know, broke. And then, of course, the most common one for so many of us is electronic addiction, right? That we are absolutely addicted to our cell phones, our tablets, our computers, all of the things, all of the ways, our Netflix account, our binge watching TV, right? I mean, think of the countless hours you've spent doing those things. And all of them are acceptable, at least to some extent, where we're still just completely wasting our own time. Now, we can go to the socially unacceptable side, and we can look at things like alcoholism, drug abuse, obesity, eating disorders that become obvious to the world, like anorexia, hoarding, inappropriate amounts of anger, self-mutilation, and the big one, I think, is anxiety and depression. Right? Those are not socially acceptable. We're trying to, so many of us, bring awareness to the mental health thing. I mean, for me, absolutely, my dieting and worrying about my body were a way to manage my anxiety. It was a control thing. And I fed my depression by enjoying buying food or buying things I didn't need. And it was just those little dopamine kicks that continue to support me. But those are not considered socially acceptable. Those are on the no-no list, along with, of course, porn and sex addiction. Your Tinder account, totally cool, but once it gets to the point of full-blown addict, not cool. And all of these are, over and over again, are maladaptive coping strategies. That's it. All right? So it's this idea that we're supposed to be perfect and that we're not supposed to be our messy selves. I found this beautiful quote. I'm reading it. What I can do is offer myself wholehearted and present to walk with the people I love through the fear and the mess. That's all any of us can do. That's what we're here for, right? To walk with the people we love through the fear and the mess. To link arms, to support one another, and to actively walk into the struggle with the perception that we are humans having the experience and that we're the intent of our souls choosing embodiment is to walk into the mess and unravel ourselves in a way that allows us to keep digging deeper to who we are and who we're meant to be, right? That's it. That is the work. The work is Pablo Picasso, find your gift and give it away, right? The work is showing up and listening to who it is that your soul is telling you you are and who you're meant to be. And nobody on the outside is going to give you that information, right? I want a handbook, a guidebook. I want to go to somebody and them to tell me exactly what I need to do, right? But it doesn't work that way. And even if people give you seeds of information, say, you know, people who know more right? If they give us some information about what's meant to happen, it's still up to us to create the action. And there's still going to be daily decisions every day you got to make on your own. So I think you have to decondition yourself and work from there to then discover what it is that your life is meant to be. Okay. So ask yourself things like, you know, who was I? Who did I want to be when I was little? If you wanted to be a doctor, look at the healing modalities. Look at helping others heal, right? So if you're not currently a doctor, look at how you can be a helper and a healer in the world. If you wanted to be a policeman or a lawyer, look at justice. How can you rise up and help the oppressed? What injustices and oppressions in the world speak most to you? And are you willing to find time to contribute in that way? Right? Because when you tap into what your soul's purpose is and what it's meant to be, then it's easier. You feel more connected to your own meaning and you have a more meaningful, connected, and content life. If you wanted to be a teacher, my mom told me the other day that when I was little, I always thought I would be a teacher. And even in college, I changed my major at least 7 times. And many times it was a different incarnation of teacher, art teacher, social studies teacher, elementary school teacher. It changed several times. And ultimately, had I just went with my gut from freshman year onward, I would have stuck with psychology because it was the easiest and it made the most sense. But I knew, something in me knew that teacher was part of it. Of course, later I didn't need my college education necessarily to do the work I've done, but it certainly has helped in being a yoga teacher. And I educate, you know, people on essential oils and wellness. So certainly my teaching is in that avenue. And even this podcast, I hope it some ways becomes an opportunity for me to remember my own soul's contract to be a teacher in the world, right? To share what I've learned in this thing we call life, and what I continue to learn. So other questions you can ask if you don't feel like you know what your soul's purpose is, ask those questions about what you wanted to be when you were little. Ask your parents or anyone who knew you then and see what roles you like to play, because it will guide you back to who you are at the core, those heart-centered knowings come as a child before the world got its hands on you, you know, and started to tell you, you know, where you would make the most money and what you were allowed to be based on your gender and your socioeconomic status and all those things that are similar, right? And so ask yourself, what's your crazy audacious dream? If all the rules were thrown out the window and you had the means and you were free of your limiting beliefs, so you didn't have to worry about playing small or how you would do it, what would you want to become, create, or contribute? In what ways would you do that? And then think about, like, how would your life change, right? For me, all the things I want to become and continue to work towards becoming, for me, are about contribution in this way of teaching and offering people opportunities to do what I'm asking you to do now, which is to step into your own work, which will lead you back to yourself, your light, your purpose. And I truly believe that if more and more of us are doing that, the world will continue to change for the good, right? That more of us will feel elevated in our consciousness, and that consciousness will rise up and it will start to really contribute and change the world that we're in. And so for me, a huge part of that is just simply contribution, and that if I can do my work of showing up in the ways I know I'm led to, then others will be inspired to do the same, and they will contribute in their way, right? So how will it change my life? It will change my life because I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'll feel content with that. But it'll change the world because I know that I'm inspiring others to do what I'm doing, to tell the truth about who they are, and to step into that truth and offer it back, and to tell their stories, because stories are so freaking powerful. And what else would I do? I mean, if that success led to more abundance in my life, then I'd have more ways to contribute to causes that I care about, and there are plenty. You know, I was asked, like, if you want to know what you're passionate about, scroll through Facebook or read the news and figure out what pisses you off the most. And then you're being called, right, to your own work and where you need to start stepping up and stepping in. So I think those are really great questions for leading you back to yourself. I think the work looks like daily practice of introspection. Why did I behave like that? What could I have done better? Oh, here's that thing where I'm a jerk again and I say the mean thing. Or, oh, there I am being passive aggressive again. Or there I am telling myself that story about how I don't belong and I need to start owning my shit and just know that that shit ain't true and I need to challenge it. Because it's not like you're not going to be your human self and screw things up in the way you always have. You're simply going to choose to see things, to step back, to pause, to reflect, and try to do a little bit better next time, right? Know better, do better. And really, ultimately, this means that you're being responsible for your life and that you're taking responsibility of your mistakes and your choices and your setbacks and your part in all things, both the good and the bad, which is like the adult thing to do. And being an adult, a grown up, is freaking hard. It's hard. Choosing to recognize that we are spiritual beings, having a human experience, the human part, really hard. I go back and forth between it all the time where my human self is having a temper tantrum inside and I'm pissed at the walls I'm facing and the obstacles I'm seeing and why things haven't happened as I think they should and the timeline that I think they should, right? But the other part of me says, this is the work, Anne. You're here for a reason. What could you learn from this? What can you do better? How could you choose a different perspective so you don't feel like you're stuck in the struggle? How can you change your mantra? What do you need to own in this, right? And I dance between those two things, the temper tantrum, hissy fit version of humanness that's messy, and then the all-knowing version of myself that says, come on, this is what you're meant to be doing. This is the work, okay? It also means forgiving, releasing, and letting go of whatever it is that holds you back, the wounds, the people who've hurt you, the shit that went wrong, and freeing yourself so that you can move forward. Because if you're held back by that weight, you will go nowhere, nowhere quickly at least. And most of the places you'll go will just keep affirming what you haven't worked through, what you haven't let go of. Of course, I love to read. I'm looking at a stack of books at least 2 feet high right now of books that I've either read or need to read or want to look at again. I've got books and books and books. Self-study, signing up for courses online. I mean, go to Udemy. They got all kinds of things that you could learn about. Meditating has started to change my life. So I'm also a huge believer in learning to meditate. And don't be like me. Don't let it take 15 years for you to actually make a concentrated effort to meditate. Because if you have any sense at all that you are an intuitive being, you have the opportunity to expand that tenfold, quadruple tenfold. Does that even, you know what I mean? By simply sitting down and meditating. It's been really profound for me. Throw some crystals in there and some guided meditations to learn the language of how to open yourself up. And it is much more than just simply sitting still. And then, of course, I think the most important thing for me has always been a willingness to show up as myself. So you need to show up as you, and I'm going to show up as me, and we're going to do our best to hold space for one another, to be that true self, to step into the world unapologetically as yourself, not the version that the world is asking you to be. And I just think it's important to always remind myself and you that for me, anxiety and depression, my experience of those things, certainly there was probably and probably always will be a biological component passed down. Maybe it's cellular memory from some of the things that I've carried that have been carried lifetime to lifetime. Maybe it's past lives, right? I think it's been a combination of all of those things. But often my anxiety or my depression has become the most unbearable when I am not honoring the call from inside, that little quiet voice that's guiding me, that I believe comes from my higher self, crown chakra, above and beyond my body. When I'm not listening to what I know I need to be doing, that's when I feel the most anxious or the most depressed. So I'd ask you to start to look at if you suffer with anxiety, depression, busyness, stress, start to ask questions of it and start to look at when it comes up the most pervasively in your life and see if there's something there for you that you need to be looking at. See if you can feel a nudge that's calling you to move in a different direction, because I would challenge you to consider that there's a big red flag being waved in your face and it's begging you to change directions, to go a different way. And it's up to you to decide whether or not you're willing to do that, right? And for me still, sometimes the answer is like, nope, not yet. Not yet. I know I will eventually, but I'm not ready yet. And that's okay too, but starting to recognize those things are super important. I think we have to just be willing to think more deeply about our lives. And remember that the people you meet are only able to meet you at the depth they've met themselves, but you are working to meet yourself more deeply every day. And then find people who are at least similar to you, who can have and hold space for these conversations, who can understand the way that you're seeing the world and challenge you to keep looking a little bit deeper. And that in that space, you can be a contributor. You can manifest your soul's purpose. You can figure out who you are and start showing up as that version of yourself more willingly. And when you do that, the light that wakes up inside you will inspire other people to do that same thing. You will give other people permission to show up in their own light. You know, we have to be willing to be ourselves. So you have to be willing to be you for you in order to help contribute to healing the world. And I believe in you, and I know that you matter, just as I matter, and everyone you meet matters. But we have to be the ones who are willing to show other people the way by stepping in and modeling what it looks like to be in the work. It's not easy. Some days I just want to wish, right, that like, what is it? Ignorance is bliss, and numbing is numbing. But I know that at some point we're all called to wake up and to stop the behaviors that are keeping us numb. And we just have to open our eyes up and wake up and being willing to shift the perspective, because the perspective of stepping into the spiritual version of ourselves gives us at least the pause that allows us to evaluate the human mess a little differently. And ultimately, I believe if you want to make an impact on the world, it can only come as you showing up as yourself, your authentic self. Otherwise, you know, people smell bullshit a mile away, and we're not fooling anyone. And you can yell platitudes from the rooftops, but if it's not connecting deeply to who you are, if you're not connected to the platitudes that you're speaking because you're in it, you won't make the impact you mean to make. You will not make a lasting impact. All right, I'm going to leave you with two things. One, listen deeply enough to be changed by what you hear. And the last quote is called Her Time by Lang Leave. She's been feeling it for a while now, that sense of awakening. There's a gentle rage simmering inside her, and it's getting stronger by the day. She will hold it close to her. She will nurture it and let it grow. She won't let anyone take it away from her. It is her rocket fuel. And finally, she is going places. She can feel it down to her very core. This is her time. She will not only climb mountains, she will move them too. All the time, your struggle, your pain, your challenges, your anger, your frustration, all of the big emotions, right? They can serve to burn you up into ashes and take you to the ground and keep you small and insignificant. Or you can choose to allow them to light you up, to serve as rocket fuel. You can be the phoenix rising, or you can stay in the ashes. It's your choice. And I'm inviting you to do the same thing I do to myself every day, which is the invitation to keep saying, yes, I am willing to do this work. Thanks, you guys. We'll talk soon.